Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. This winter, Strategic Farm Marketing is holding risk management seminars near you. A complete list of meeting dates and locations can be found at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the January 10 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. There you can listen to the whole of our programming anytime you'd like. Again, the address, WILLAG.org. You can also find us as a podcast in iTunes, the Google Play Store, NPR One, and on SoundCloud, most other places that you find podcasts as well. Our panelists today include Merrill Crowley. He's with Midwest Market Solutions out of Watseka, Illinois, along with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. For this edition of Commodity Week, gentlemen, I'd like to start with this question. I think, Wayne, we'll start with you. USDA will not, of course, release an update of the crop production numbers for the United States this week. However, CONAB on Thursday did release a set of numbers, and those showed maybe a better soybean crop than I think most had expected that CONAB would, given the dry conditions that have been suffered across parts of Brazil. What did you think of that particular report?
Well, you know, it was a little higher than what they were looking for, but they also said that that was a January 1st number, and it's January 10th, and we've had continued to be dry through that time period. Some of the different people, like Ag Resource, and those have been talking that if we stayed with the same conditions that are in the forecast for right now, that we could slide down to the 113 million metric tons. But we have to stay with the adverse pattern that we're looking at in late February. So that's yet to be seen. But that did not help the bean market today, that's for sure.
Yeah, certainly did not help the bean market. And Kurt Kimmel, I wonder whether no new news out of the Chinese-U.S. agreement or no indication of what the ag portion of that agreement might look like also had an impetus on the marketplace on Thursday.
Well, it was definitely down and dirty Thursday. We haven't seen one of these for quite some time. But I think it was just a combination of things. So fundamentally there, just as you mentioned, there's no real details on the Chinese news particularly. And the fear is that the state agency has bought as much as they need to buy for right now. And that if they do buy additional quantities, it might be some other commodities or beans for new crop down the road. So we'll see how those unfold. Bean basis was kind of sloppy. The cash guys kind of backed away from the marketplace. They might have done that just to get the market to go down so they could buy some more overall. Also, too, technically, we saw the bean market, any corn market, also rally up to some longer-term resistance points, couldn't really go through it. And so with the momentum indicators kind of tied you through here, saw the technical picture turn a little south in through here, saw quite a bit of liquidation, or I should say selling from the commodity funds. Also, too, there was some reallocation of the commodity funds in general, not just the rolling, but just the reallocation of some money around and positioning around, and that might have had a little bit of pressure in the grain complex as a whole. So all those combinations together just kept the bean market in defensive posture once we got into the mid-morning trade.
Kurt, do we have an indication of the reallocation as a percentage or whether they came in and out of the market in greater amounts than they have in the previous year at this point?
I'm not quite for sure. Earlier comments were that they would probably be buyers of some beans, but that wasn't the case today. Now, when you look at the trading funds, the funds that come and go all the time, they were short about 4,000 contracts of beans, long about 114,000 contracts of corn, and short about 7,000 contracts of wheat. As we went through the day in the midday, they were sellers over 14,000 beans, 6,000 corn, and 5,000 wheat. But this is just a minor adjustment. The reallocations or the funds that are in there for the long haul, kind of a buy and hold situation. So today was supposed to be the last day of that, so hopefully it's got it out of its system.
So Kirk calls the adjustment, not the trade for the day, but the adjustment that the allocations were made as to be minor Merrill. However, we're kind of in this trading range, and where do you think the market might be headed for soybeans?
For soybeans, first stop is 9, and we hit that pretty quick. I'm talking March. Next stop's probably around 880 in the March contract. Up to this time, up to today, we basically are seeing bean prices stay kind of in the middle of the range, with the high side being up around 10, 10.50, the low side being around $8, maybe 8.50. And it just kind of shows that the trade is just unsure which way to move. When you look at the total bean stocks we have is 955 million. And we're currently about 356 million behind what we did last year. If that were to happen, in other words, if we could get some good announcements from Chinese to buy the market and take some of that 350 back out of the ending stocks, and hopefully if you were to draw it down completely to 350 million, you would bring your stocks to use ratio somewhere down in the, 15.2, 15.6 type area. Now, if you then go back in history to large stocks years, there's one that seems to match for me particularly is 99-2000. And in that 2000 year, we had a 15% stocks to use, pretty similar to what we would have if we get more buying. And the market was able to rally 30.5%. If we saw that rally, you'd be looking at 1060. I don't think you're going to see that. You're going to see the full recovery. But just to sit here and say right here and now that the market over and done with, I still think there's too much weather to go and too much uncertainty yet.
Let me go through some of those numbers with you just so that I understand them, and I'll round them just a bit just to make it easier. I know it's 955 million that's carry out, but let's say it's 950 and you're saying we're behind 350 million at this point to get to what USDA says would be exported from the United States, at least on the last WASDE report. That would have been in the month of December. Those two numbers are correct, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and so then you subtract the 350, you'd get about 600 million bushels in carryout. So now, what happens if a portion, and I don't know what portion of USDA's expectation, is not actually shipped and exported, that 350 million, say 100 million of it? Does it make a difference if we go very much over a billion bushels to the marketplace?
I would think it would. I mean, and all that depends on how does the South American crop end. Do we end up still taking more off of it? The other situation that you would have to watch is how many acres are we going to plant this year here in the U.S. and what type of weather situation we're going to have. Psychologically, I think if you get over a billion bushels carry out, you definitely have that pressure on the marketplace to push it lower.
Wayne Nelson, as you listen to this set of numbers, I know you've been thinking about it, but it can be pretty scary if you really think about it for very long. It's just a big pile of soybeans, and while we've made it through 2018 pretty well, thanks mostly, I believe, in part to the MFP, or the Market Facilitation Program payments, 2019 doesn't look very good at this point, does it?
With a billion bushel carryouts here building up, or with even if we do get some business from China, South America is undercutting us now, even without the tariffs being added on. Just if we didn't have tariffs, so they've got a good crop coming on. You know, it's not as good as it was a month ago, and it might not be as good as it is today in a month, but they've still got a good crop of beans down there compared to last year. And they're going to be in the world market, and it's going to be awfully hard to see beans over $10 come November.
Yeah, so by compared to last year, you mean when you add Argentina and Brazil together, Argentina's
right,
crop
yes.
was really rough last year because of drought. This year, underwater at this point, but we know water is better than no water at all for the crop. And Brazil is backing off, but it's still got a really big number, doesn't it, Wayne? I mean, at 118.8 million metric tons, according to CONAB.
Yeah, now that's big. And I mean, and even if we did progress and we did hold the drought and wet weather together in South America, we're still talking 111, 113 million metric tons coming out of South America. So that way. I, you know, listened to a couple other news articles today, and basically they were talking, you know, just about some farmers might be a little short of cash flow and they might still continue to grow beans. We might not see the switch from bean to corn acres next year that we're looking for because of bankers. So that can change, too, on how many acres we put in the ground. And like I say, we are looking at our forecast, or we don't know what our spring's going to be. Years ago, they always said lots of snow made lots of grain, and we haven't seen lots of snow yet. But there's a lot of weather to handle yet, as Merrill said, with their crop and with our planting crop and our crop also.
So you hit on the one thing, Wayne, and I think, Kurt, I'll have you take this up, that we can look forward to maybe more than one thing, but at this point in time, we look forward to the end of the month of March and what the acreage mix in the United States might be. Wayne says that there may be some pressure from the banks. I would think potentially on farmers west of the Mississippi River, maybe in the Dakotas and Minnesota, more than other places, but still, that could create some problems. And you couple that with the report that we have not yet seen still, and won't until USDA and the comes back and the government shutdown ends, which is the wheat seedings report. We might have some acres out there that end up in soybeans in Kansas as well, I suppose. That all bodes. I was thinking that we might have a better conversation today, but this all bodes not as well for the soybean market as maybe I thought we could come up with for this edition of Commodity Week.
Well, if you look at the acres, and if you see 10 million acres less of beans and you drop yield 2 bushels an acre, you can get carry out down under 400 million bushels. So, we'll see what the numbers unfold here. But even the world supply demand balance sheet, you're talking 115, 114 million metric tons. A year ago, we were 112, and the previous record before was about 101. So, we need to take about 10 to 15 million metric tons out of production here, or carry out, to get to tighten up that supply-demand balance sheet on the world scale, to get the trade excited to the upside. But that's fundamentally, you look at these big numbers, but beans just continue to hang in here. You think these beans would be about down to $6, and that's just not the case for now. So we'll see how things unfold here. The main concern about the bean complex is the wide basis. Producers are, in some areas here in central Illinois, are looking at 50, 60 cents basis. They're having to deal with that, trying to move beans and trying to get a good value there. And that's going to be the challenge here, is the basis levels.
So I think that is the question to deal with, really, is you mentioned that beans, you would think they would be lower. We thought that they would be lower last year. We thought that they would be lower the year before, and they just don't really go down all that much. Now, they're lower, but not, they're lower by the tariff amounts. Not really by those standards were high at this point, but they just seem to be able to hang in. Why do you think that is the case, Kurt?
Well, that's a great question. I really don't have a good answer, other than somebody knows something somewhere for these markets to be where they are. I believe that there's some, when you look at the futures market, that's the future. I think there is, concern. Overall world demand for beans is really up there, so there's urgency to make sure we have plenty of supply around. And two, when you start talking about China coming in back as a buyer, it goes back to the old days when Russia came in as a buyer, or Egypt came in as a buyer of wheat, and some of these other countries came forward here. There's some fairly good moves in these marketplaces, and so I think the fear is not having some ownership on if this market would get riled up and going, particularly when all the cards in the southern hemisphere, if they start having some production problems, a dock strike, port strike, I think there's some urgency to have a little coverage on until we get into the spring or early summer.
Hey, Merrill, on the flip side, and you can take the soybeans up if you want, but the corn, we kept thinking, why is it not moving higher and continue to do so, given the carryout in the corn, that it seems like it is in a space where the corn market might need to add acreage, or that it might want to be higher, at least in price, if not in total volume. What's your make of the ratio of the two?
I was wanting to mention one other thing with the beans, which is the past 10 years, USDA has been 40% overestimated on the soybeans from the largest size of the crop. If 955 remains our largest size, that would again bring us down to that 560. So I would say that has something to do with the market staying higher. I think the corn, we are seeing really good demand right now. The question being is, I think we saw more demand show up from Ukraine, more demand show up, or more of our demand went to the Ukraine, more of our demand went to Brazil than we thought. And I think that was mainly due to the big increase in the U.S. dollar that we saw earlier this year, or late last year, early this year. We're starting to see the dollar turn off on that or go lower, and we're also seeing the real rally. So that could provide us some market yet. And I just don't think it's over. But when you start emptying Brazil out of its crop, and they're not going to have more crop until we have more crop. The Ukraine, if you start pulling crop out of there, and the dollar keeps moving lower with the uncertainness in the marketplace or the global marketplace, I think you're going to see some of that demand come back to the corn, and corn will still see a move up. But part of the reason why it hasn't, I think our demand, the general world corn demand has gone to other places at this time. And I think the other thing that would keep it from coming here, people are worried about what Trump's going to do. He doesn't mind using something as a tariff or something to get his way in the world markets, and that's made us somewhat unreliable.
Well, that is one of the things on the world front, I think, that many are wondering about the reliability of the United States and what that really means. A tariff. I've seen the argument that a tariff is a tariff and it doesn't impact the reliability other than it adds to the export cost for the end user. So it'll be interesting to watch this continue to unfold, I think. I'm still wondering about this ratio, Wayne Nelson. We were at 2.7 to 1, and I think we're around 2.4 now. That's the long-term ratio for soybeans to corn. Do you think that we are now back to a plateau where these are the prices that we're going to be dealing with in a natural way for corn and soybeans across the United States? Have we come to that medium point for the marketplace?
Well, I think with all the different things that are going on, we're somewhat in range. We find ourselves in ranges here. They're bigger ranges than we've seen a lot of times. I mean, there's a lot of things going on right now. I mean, the ethanol market is very stagnant right now. The ethanol plants are not bidding up for corn as they're looking out there. I think that we're looking at less, demand by then. The basis levels aren't near as tight as what we thought they would be. We've seen the wheat prices. Russia has captured that market, but it seems like now when they're coming back from holiday, we're seeing some rising prices on the inner part, the ruble going up on the shortage of wheat and close to the export terminals is going to make us maybe get into this wheat market, which could be the low price wheat out there. Wheat's taken over some of the corn trade that way. But I think as we look at it, we aren't getting quite the exports we really were hoping for. This time of year, if the increases we were looking for when the rest of the world was down that way. And I think that we had a tremendous, tremendous crop this year in a lot of places. And I think there's a little more corn sitting in farmers' hands than usual at this time of year.
One thing, too, I just want to jump in here. The structure or the market's changed considerably here in the last year. And I think it's due to the fact that the producer has backed off on his own marketing and has turned marketing over to the major grain companies, where they've got all these specialty contracts and these specialty marketing programs, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. However, the commercial people you talk to, their job is to go out and secure grain, and they're securing grain way ahead of time, and so there's not no urgency to buy or panic and try to get some coverage on, because when these farmers and landowners and whoever enters these marketing programs, they've got that inventory booked way well ahead of time. And I think that's one of the obstacles we're running into, along with some extra supplies to chew through too.
Oh, so it's taken some of the volatility out of the marketplace by eliminating the need for either the producer to sell or for the originator, the grain elevator, to purchase, simply because it's all that those contracts are already made.
Yeah, when you enter these programs ahead of time, it's kind of like the old hog industry when we shifted from all these small producers to larger producers, and we went from individual marketing to contract farming. And with these the new programs these grain companies have come up with, but there's nothing wrong with it. It just, they've got those supplies secured ahead of time.
Todd, I was talking to one of the producers this afternoon. They say, you know, Cargill, which is hooked up with Valero up in Linden, you know, they're bidding a little more aggressive than Poets are right now. But they're out there. Well, they have a guaranteed across, you know, they ship so much just by a rope. They don't truck it. You know, it just goes across the conveyor a day. And they want to have so much on hand, and they'll pay up a little more for the deferred in case there's a weather problem or what. And they're paying more for July corn and whatever out there along that way. And like you say, they want to have so much on hand, and they've got a guaranteed market that way. And I think that's what we're seeing is some of those, they're being a little more prepared in the ethanol plants, that it's not so tight that they maybe have to pay 15 or 20 cents more on a basis level at a certain time, because they are looking ahead and procuring a little more. And the farmers are, like Kurt said, going a little bit more into selling chunks ahead when it's a little better basis and stuff that way than they were in the past.
So I was thinking the structure had been changing, that there was so much storage that producers has built, which probably is also one of the reasons behind the change in the structure of trade, that is, in the marketplace, but hadn't really considered. I wonder how much actually is under contract or under one of these unique contracts offered by the grain elevators. Has anybody heard or seen a number or a percentage across the United States? We'll see whether I can figure. Maybe I'll get the ag economist upstairs here in Mumford Hall at the U of I to take a look at that and think about what that structural change, because there may very well be one taking place, might mean to the marketplace. I know that Scott Irwin, during the Illinois Farm Economics Summits, was talking about the new era of prices and had gone back and done some work as it relates to the price plateau that he and Daryl Good had put forth back in 2006, and he dropped those numbers down, I think, to $3.75 long-term for corn now and to $9 for soybeans. And to be honest, he just did the 2.4 thing on the $9 on the ratio. So it'll be interesting to see how all that structural change works into the marketplace and what it really means, because I really was thinking about what the acreage might look like this year and what the 2.4 means to the marketplace. And it's always seemed that, at least to me, I think, and maybe to you, but you guys jump in here too, that the price of corn just hasn't rallied the way I thought it should, given what the ending stocks numbers looks like from USDA. And maybe this is the reason. I guess that's what you're trying to tell me, isn't it, Kurt?
Well, yeah. When you look at where we are to a year ago, you know, even particularly, you know, corn's not that far from there, beans, you know, 60, 70 cents below. But do we actually need more acres in general? You know, some of the conversation is, when's the market going to come in and buy acres? Well, they might not come in and buy acres at all, because the trade might be comfortable just where we're at. guys seem to be comfortable with where corn prices are right here. It seems that 380 cash plus is doable. And on the bean side, the November futures here up at close to 960, and you take a wide basis, is somewhat doable. And hopefully those are starting points. And we'll have some type of weather event or Chinese buying event take place so we can scale into some higher prices.
I guess the other thing is that we have the second crop corn coming out of Brazil, and maybe when you say, does the market need to buy acres, maybe it already has.
Yeah, I think that's very much so, and we're looking and seeing what the weather's going to be. This is terrible to wish bad on anybody, but we sort of hope that it stays dry in Brazil and wet in Argentina for the American farmer. But in all honesty, to get us down to where we might be able to get 20 or 30 cents more for corn and beans that way. You know, we're going to be looking a lot at next week to see what the U.S.-China trade does. What we really need now is for China to take some hogs, some corn, and they don't even have to take corn as corn. They need to take ethanol and DDGs would help us immensely to get back into our corn usage and do that. And, you know, we were sort of shut out of China here for quite a while, and they were our big customers. Some ethanol ethanol and DDGs would be tremendous to help our corn prices here. That could probably help us 10 or 15 cents right away.
Yeah, and they were looking, I suppose, at a broad range of items that they might import. I don't know that soybeans certainly is on that list, but soybeans also probably on that list is a much smaller item for them in the future than they have in the past, because I think they want to redistribute how they collect product from across the planet. As much as Sonny Perdue has said, U.S. farmers need to reconfigure what they think about the export markets and where they're looking to present their crops as well. Let's get a final word at this point from each of you. Merrill Crowley of Midwest Market Solutions there in Watseka. What are your final thoughts for the afternoon?
Well, I think Kurt kind of mentioned it earlier. We got to watch this basis and the spreads. They're just not doing anything to help show that we're getting any solid demand right now for our products. If we can get the basis to start tightening up the Gulf and see some, that would be a sign of some demand without any government reports. You watch your basis at the Gulf and at the Pacific Northwest. Those haven't been very strong. Your spreads have been acting poorly. So until you get those to work for you, I think prices are continuing to be suppressed. But I'm not saying the whole thing's over with. I'm just saying we just need to be patient for a little while longer.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, your final word?
Well, I'm looking for some good news next week from the Chinese when they come to the U.S. for their negotiations along the way. And we'd like to see a lot of good news soon, because Lunar New Year starts February 2nd, and that's going to keep the Chinese out of the market and out of negotiations for 10 days. And we want to get something done before that March deadline and that way. So we're looking for some good news out of that. We're looking for something good to happen. Maybe Congress can actually get back together and negotiate. That means both sides give something. And we could see some infrastructure and some other stuff happening here in the U.S.
And Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
Yeah, we like to see some good news, too. We're just fearful the market's going to stay range-bound here for a while. When you look at the timing issue, we do have a little bit of a minor low here, the 15th to 16th of January. So hopefully we can have a little positive news out of that Chinese-U.S. talk next week. Then when you look a little longer term, though, as Wayne mentioned, the Chinese New Year holiday, that runs about 10 days, and that would put us into mid-February. So the market could be structured here that we could see a good old-fashioned February low with some positive news after that.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can listen to the whole of our programming anytime you'd like online at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, from Watseka, Illinois, and Midwest Market Solutions, Merrill Crowley, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, for Illinois Extension. I'm Todd Gleason.